The Professions and Public Health Subcommittee will come to order. Aaron, please call the roll.
Representatives Andrade, Arrington,
here.
Barrero,
here.
Escamani,
here.
Fernandez-Barquin,
here.
Garrison, Gottlieb,
here.
Maggard,
here.
McLean,
here.
Rayner, excused. Rizzo,
here.
Rommel,
here.
Saroy, Skidmore,
here.
Smith,
here.
Snyder,
here.
Tuck,
here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Aaron. I wanted to remind everyone on the committee and those in the audience to please silence their cell phones and any other electronic devices. Today we will hear three proposed committee substitutes. Up first, we have PCS for House Bill 131, Military Medics and Corpsmen of Florida Programs by Representative Woodson. Representative Woodson, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, ranking members, members of the committees as well, thank you for the opportunity to present this bill. House Bill 131 requires Florida is for Veterans, Inc. to assist veterans who have armed services healthcare training, including but not limited to training as a medic in the United States Army, a medical technician in the United States Air Force, a hospital corpsman in the United States Navy, or a health service technician in the United States Coast Guard with accessing training, education, and employment in related healthcare professions. The PCS was developed in consultation with Chair Robinson, who is not here, and Policy Chief Chris McElroy. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Woodson. Having explained the bill, we are in questions. Any questions, members? Seeing none, we'll move into public testimony. From the Florida Department of Veterans Affairs, General Hartzell, also known as the Hammer, waves in support of this bill. Jimmy Smith, Concerned Veterans for America Coalition, is a proponent and waves in support of the bill. Matthew Herndon, United Way Suncoast, waves in support. William Helmick, American Legion, waves in support. Ariadne Rodriguez wishes to speak on the bill. Mr. or Mrs. Rodriguez, they are a proponent of the bill. Matthew Herndon, United Way of Broward County, waves in support. And lastly, William Helmick, Veterans of Foreign Wars for Florida, waves in support. We are now in debate. Any members wishing to debate on this bill? Representative Escamani, you are recognized.
Thank you so much, Chair. I just want to say thank you to Rep. Woodson. You're always prioritizing some of our most important and vulnerable communities, from seniors to today veterans. I just want to say thank you for your leadership, and hopefully we'll get this to the floor.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Rizzo, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, thank you for bringing this. I'm really proud to say that I'm going to vote up on this bill, and hopefully I'm going to vote up on the floor on this bill. People don't realize that Florida is the second largest population of veterans in the nation. And we have a crisis in healthcare professions right now. And so I'm glad that someone is carrying this, and I'm sure that that you're going to be very successful in getting this over the finish line. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rizzo. Any other members in debate? Seeing none, Representative Woodson, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair Snyders, and thank you as well, member of the committee. Before I even close, let me say thank you so much to all the veterans for your service. And as well, I would like to say happy Valentine's to every single one of us. It's really, I want to thank a lot of people who have helped me to get this bill to where it is. I would like to thank Chair Robinson, who has allowed me to put this PCS on the agenda. And also I have Bob and so many of the other people who are here who helped me with this bill, actually. This bill will address the need to recruit more healthcare workers, seeing the shortage that we have in the healthcare industry, as well as our veterans who left the armed forces with the best training that you could ever imagine. So that would allow them to get the training and education that they need for upward mobility. Thank you again, Chair. Thank you, members. I look forward to your support.
Having closed on the bill, Aaron, please call the roll on PCS for House Bill 131 and announce the vote.
Representatives Andrade?
Yes.
Arrington?
Yes.
Barrero?
Yes.
Escamani?
Yes.
Fernandez-Barquin?
Yes.
Garrison? Gottlieb? Maggard?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Rommel? Yes. Saroy? Skidmore?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
13 yeas and 0 nays, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Aaron. Show the bill reported favorably. Up next for consideration, we will have PCS for House Bill 131, Military Medics and Corpsmen of Florida Programs by Representative Woodson. And now that our chairman is back, I'll turn the gavel back over to you, Mr. Chairman.
You have a breathless chairman right now coming from the House office. Representative Woodson. Representative Amphore, you are, let's see here. Next up for consideration, PCS for House Bill 453, Uterine Fibroid Research and Education by Representative Amphore. Representative, you're recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you so very much, Chair Robinson, for hearing this very important legislation. Chair Robinson, Vice Chair Snyder, Ranking Member Smith, and members of the Professions and Public Health Subcommittee, thank you for allowing me to present today. HB 543, Uterine Fibroids Research and Education. Uterine fibroids are non-cancerous tumors that can be found in or around the uterus and usually develop during our childbearing age for women. About 70% of women will develop fibroids between the age of 30 and 50. Currently, there's a lack of documentation and research of uterine fibroids, which sometimes leads patients to undergo unnecessary surgeries. This bill requires healthcare providers who diagnose or treat women with fibroids to submit information relating to such diagnosis or treatment to the Department of Health, and requires the Department of Health to develop and include specified information about fibroids in certain women's healthcare educational material, including alternative treatment options to hysterectomies. The purpose of the database is to encourage research relating to the diagnosis and treatment of uterine fibroids, and to ensure that women are provided with the relevant information and healthcare necessary to prevent and treat uterine fibroids. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Questions? Questions for Representative Amphore on PS for HB 543. Seeing none, we'll move into public testimony. We have no public testimony. Members, we are in debate. Seeing no debate, Representative Amphore, you're recognized to close in your bill.
Thank you so very much, Chair Robinson, for working with me on this bill. I'd like to thank Chief McElroy. I probably said your last name incorrectly, but thank you for your guidance and assistance. I'd like to thank our health department for helping me with this. This has been a labor of love. I'm going to take time, if you don't mind. In 2015, I asked my aunt, who's then Representative Rogers, to carry the proclamation proclaiming Fibroids Awareness Month as the month of July. And Representative Thompson, now Representative Thompson, then Senator Thompson, carried it on the Senate side. Florida was the first state to recognize fibroids awareness. It is now nationally recognized as July being Fibroids Awareness Month because of the work that Florida did. So thank you very much to my colleagues who came before me for seeing this as important. In 2021, we went with the health department to sit down and discuss the fact that there, you know, to see if there was information in order to help with this particular issue. I had a conversation with Chair Fine, and he explained to me that his wife, during her first pregnancy, found out she had fibroids, and during her second one, it caused complications. There are so many of my colleagues. Representative Hart told me that she actually had to have a hysterectomy in her 20s. This is a situation that affects so many women of so many different age groups, and we got to figure out a solution. So I thank you once again for the opportunity to present this, and On that, I will close.
Representative Omotfuori, having closed on her bill, Aaron, please call the roll on PCS for HB 693 and announce the vote.
Representatives Andrade?
Yes.
Arrington?
Yes.
Barrero?
Yes.
Escamani?
Yes.
Fernandez-Barquin?
Yes.
Garrison? Gottlieb? Maggard?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Rommel?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Robinson?
Yes.
15 yeas and 0 nays, Mr. Chairman.
Please show the bill reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chair.
Next up for consideration by this subcommittee, PCS for HB 687, Free Speech of Healthcare Practitioners by Representative Drake. Representative Drake, you're recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Chairman Robinson, members of the committee. Since the United States Constitution came into force in 1789, it has been amended 27 times in order to meet the needs of a nation that has profoundly changed since the 18th century. For instance, the 26th Amendment allowed citizens who have reached the age of 18 the right to vote. And that was a good thing to do. The 19th Amendment passed to prohibit the government from denying women the right to vote. That was a really good thing to do. The 15th Amendment passed to prohibit the use of race or color to determine which citizens can vote. Absolutely a right thing to do. The 13th Amendment abolished slavery. Absolutely the right thing to do. The 4th Amendment protects us from unlawful search and seizure. Another good idea. Second Amendment allows one to bear arms, and the First Amendment gives Americans the right to speak. I want to focus in on the First Amendment to the United States Constitution today, which I think was so important that it passed first. I believe every single one of those amendments add to the fabric of the being of the nation of which we are and are all worth defending. This bill, House Bill 687, it does just that. It affords Florida physicians the right to practice their mastery without relinquishing the rights afforded to any other American citizen. Let me give you an example of what is at stake, what kind of elevates my concern. Panhandle physician Dr. Joel Rudman was on two front page articles in two different county newspapers promoting vaccines. Big headline, local doc says normalcy is within reach if you get vaccinated. He was the most vocal advocate of vaccination in Santa Rosa County and made over 400 buttons for his vaccinated patients saying, vaccinated and free. So Dr. Rudman was the good guy at this point. Now let's fast forward to a couple of months ago. Dr. Rudman caught COVID, and he commented on his Facebook page his personal disappointment that despite being fully vaccinated, he still caught COVID. Shortly thereafter, Dr. Rudman received a letter in the mail from the American Board of Family Practice threatening to remove his board certification. Dr. Rudman went from being the good guy to the bad guy. So what may seem or sound controversial or complex in this bill, it really is not. This bill, House Bill 687, it does two things. It says no board may reprimand, sanction, or revoke a doctor's license for speech. And two, a board must tell a doc if someone has filed a complaint against them within 7 days. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that's my bill.
Thank you, Representative. Having explained his bill, questions? Questions from the committee on this bill? Representative Scamani, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thanks, Representative Drake. I do have a few questions. I'll go to the chair for it. I guess reading this bill, one of my concerns is disinformation, which unfortunately has been rampant during the COVID-19 pandemic, but even before the pandemic, disinformation has been an issue. And of course, medical providers are trusted voices, but there has been a lot of disinformation sometimes coming from folks who have a medical background, but their comments online, for example, as pertaining to your bill, can actually cause a lot of harm. And, you know, for example, I think about LGBTQ plus people and the notion of conversion therapy, which is a misnomer. There is no such thing as conversion therapy, but there are some practitioners out there who act like it is, and that can cause not just physical harm, but even mental harm for individuals who see that information. So is there a concern about disinformation that's not credible, but being deemed credible because it's coming from what we would assume to be a credible voice?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. If a physician were to do something very reckless, like say it's okay to gargle bleach to get rid of COVID, okay, that would be very stupid. And the law already contemplates that under the concept of willful negligence. So the protections are there if the public felt like someone that they entrusted was making these statements that were more than flippant, they were defamatory or certainly 100% inaccurate or stupid, then the law already contemplates that through willful negligence.
Representative Viscomani, for a follow-up, you're recognized.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that, Rep. So, I mean, why do you have this beyond reasonable doubt language in the bill then that a doctor's speech must lead to direct physical harm for someone of a patient they have the last 3 years? I mean, why even include that type of, narrow definition if you feel like there's already a path for people to seek justice? I mean, why do you have to narrow it down in this bill to such specifics?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
For the very reason that Dr. Rudman, from what he experienced, I mean, he made a statement that exhibited some disappointment in the fact that he did something very practical, very popular, and that he thought would be the right thing to do. And then he caught COVID. And then he said, okay, well, I'm disappointed that even though I have done everything that has been suggested to me by the CDC or through, the dissemination of information that was supposed to promulgate health and well-being, even though he followed all those guidelines and advocated to his patients, was just disappointed that he caught COVID. And so a few weeks later, he received a letter in the mail saying that we're going to revoke his license, or making threatening statements that made him a little bit concerned about whether or not he could potentially lose his license. So I think that's important to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. If your livelihood is on the line, I think that it's important that those that are threatening your livelihood should be able to. The burden of proof should be to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that you in fact intended to cause harm.
Follow-up, Chair.
You're recognized, Representative Escomani.
Thank you so much, Chair. And I understand that that doctor is here with us, so I know we'll hear more of his story soon. I appreciate that. So where does 3 years come from? Why 3 years as that threshold for a patient-to-provider relationship?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
I think it's reasonable. I mean, you have a patient doctor relationship that extends for 3 years. I think that's a reasonable amount of time.
Chair.
Representative Scamani, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you so much. I'm finally in the mode of adulting in my life, so I just got a primary care provider last year, so I'm not within 3 years. If my doctor said things that were not medically accurate, but I trusted him and pursued it and got hurt under this bill, I will not be able to seek any type of justice. Is that correct?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
We could make change if necessary.
Okay.
Representative Scamani, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you so much. I just want to pivot a little bit to another provision in the bill that's about the DOH reporting of complaints. What is that process like right now when you have a complaint filed against you with the department? Could you walk us through that?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
I think it says that it should provide you that information within a reasonable amount of time. So I'm defining reasonable as saying that if somebody's accusing you of something heinous or terrible or that's very dangerous, that you should be aware of it. And instead of it being 3 months or 6 months or beyond that, report that within 7 days, and I think that's fair enough.
Okay. Ms. Kamani, you're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you so much. And I do not know the answer to this question, and I'm hopeful you will. Are those complaints anonymous, or are they exempt from whole records, or do they have a name to them when someone files a complaint?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
I don't know.
Okay. Chair, follow-up.
You're recognized.
I'll try to find out myself if I can, but I guess my concern is 7 days can be a major cost. I understand that there's a financial attached to this bill, too. But if there is a name, I'm worried if I would be curious if you have a concern about people not filing complaints because their name is attached, and if we could visit that area as well.
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
Well, I think if someone's accusing you of something, that you should have an opportunity to respond, and that, quite frankly, if someone's going to go through the exercise of making a formal accusation or making a formal complaint that you've done something wrong, that you should be able to face your accuser and adequately react.
Chair, follow-up.
You're recognized.
I appreciate it. I can visit that area of perspective and debate because I'm interested in that point. I'll stop with this last question. So I know that we have had situations at a national scale of medical providers speaking on podcasts, really not providing information that is peer-reviewed or thought to be honest. You mentioned bleach as an example, or so many other examples, but not just COVID. I mean, there's also, STI disinformation. And so with this type of bill, is there a concern that those providers could continue spreading disinformation, assuming they're in Florida, without any type of repercussions, even though we know, for example, that HIV AIDS is something that can happen with anyone, not just LGBTQ plus people, but there are people out there who think otherwise, even though it's not true. Is there any concern that this bill would allow that information to flow freely with no consequences?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
If a physician makes it his or her common practice to just disseminate reckless information or inaccurate information, then they're not going to have any patients. They're going to lose all credibility in the eyes of the public and the people that they are trying to take care of. So I think that in itself, what physician wants to make that a practice of theirs, or make that commonplace, or to be known as the person who's continuously disseminating wrong information. I don't see that. But if a physician says, well, I think that based on my experience and the science that I am familiar with, that people that are 75 or 80 years of age should probably get vaccinated, in my professional opinion, and someone, and that same physician says, however, if the data shows that people that are under the age of 18, that the efficacy ratios are just not the same, then they probably should not. I think that a physician should be able to say that and not be reprimanded or have their livelihood threatened.
Representative Arrington, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Representative Drake. My question's in regard to the staff analysis, and if you had read over that, and if you had any concern like I did for the beginning of page 9, where it says the bill may conflict with DOH and the board's authority to discipline healthcare practitioners, that the current law authorizes a regulatory board or DOH, if there is no board, to discipline a healthcare practitioner's licensee for a number of offenses. And the analysis says that the bill's provisions appear to conflict with this authority. Do you have any concern in regards to that?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
I'm sorry, Representative Arrington, where are you reading from?
Representative Arrington, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The beginning of page 9 for the staff analysis, and it's right at the beginning of the page where the first line says the bill may conflict with DOH.
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
The answer is, here's what we're trying to address. We're trying to make sure we're doing two things. We're saying that no board may reprimand or sanction or revoke a doctor's license for speech, and a board must tell a doctor if someone has filed a complaint against them within 7 days. If people are acting reckless, then DOH would have authority. The patient would have recourse through the courts if a physician gave them misinformation that was done willfully or recklessly. So, I mean, there's not an incentive for a physician to act reckless or negligent. However, there is an incentive that exists that someone who may disagree with that person's speech can wreck their livelihood. And that's what I'm trying to address, to say that, hey, listen, if a physician is in practice, they have a mastery of their profession, they're skilled and knowledgeable in a certain area of health delivery, that they should have the ability to enjoy the liberties and freedoms that our Constitution gives us in the First Amendment, just like any other American.
Representative Merrington, you recognize for follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So do you disagree then with the analysis, or you do not think that this would conflict with the authority of DOH?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
I believe that DOH still would have certain recourses under the current law.
Good, Representative. Ranking Member Smith, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Drake, trying to understand how this bill would impact some of the national agencies, national groups that have the ability to hold healthcare practitioners and physicians accountable. Does your bill, I mean, do we even have the authority to stop, let's say, the American Board of Medical Specialties, which is a nationwide group, from being able to hold physicians accountable for pushing disinformation and going outside of what is commonly known as commonly medically accepted practices?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Most insurance providers and hospitals, they require board certification in order to be able to accept insurance or to be able to admit into a hospital. So because of that, there is a commercial element that we as lawmakers who control Florida policy, we have a vested interest in to protect those people that choose to practice in Florida. So I think that, you know, to answer your question, if some private board makes an effort to interfere with that, and we recognize as policymaker that there's a, you know, that could be very detrimental for the pursuit of happiness as a physician, that we have an obligation and we are afforded an opportunity to negate that. And so that's what I'm trying to do today, is to make sure that physicians who practice, who are in good standing, who exhibit good conduct, that they should not fear being able to speak publicly about their mastery and their profession.
Ranking Member Smith, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to get a clarification. You're speaking in a lot of generalities, like physicians who engage in good conduct. The words good conduct don't show up anywhere in the bill. You're also saying if a physician acts recklessly, then the DOH would have the authority to hold them accountable. There's no language in here that says anything about a physician acting recklessly. What provisions are in here separate from what you mentioned before, willful negligence, that will help ensure that Florida's patients, that our residents, are protected from harm from doctors who push disinformation?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
Quite simply, the current law does that now. What I'm saying is that we want to provide protections that, while current law provides certain liability protections or while that is something that we're granted, I don't want someone to be able to tell you that you can't speak in public.
Member Smith, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned in the bill that the DOH is also tied up in this bill if there's no other board or oversight authority. So what are the penalties, for example, if DOH doesn't comply with your bill with the 7-day complaint notification requirement? Are there fines and fees? What's the penalty for noncompliance?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
I don't know what's in the administrative code, but if you'll allow me, I'll try to figure out exactly what you're asking, get you a response.
Ranking Member Smith, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What is the pressing need or problem that exists that justifies the need for government, big government, to jump in and tell these associations, these regulatory boards, including the Board of Medicine, how they're going to hold professionals in their own trade and in their own profession accountable? What's that compelling government interest?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
To protect people like Dr. Redman.
Ranking Member Smith, you're recognized.
Thank you. So the First Amendment also talks about freedom of association. So if a doctor joins a medical group and they're associated with that group, they are free to do that. But then once they're in the group, that group has a right to regulate that healthcare provider's conduct, do they not?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
If they're going to do it in Florida, they're going to do it under our terms.
Ranking Member Smith, you're recognized.
Okay, so I've got questions about how this applies to folks who currently work for the Department of Health. I have an amendment that's coming forward in a minute, and I'm trying to understand if your bill perhaps already covers this. So Orange County's director of our county health department, Dr. Raul Pino, was recently taken off the job for, I would argue, doing his job, encouraging employees at the County Department of Health to get vaccinated. He was taken off of the job by the State Department of Health. I suppose you would argue that he was exercising his freedom of speech to follow medically accepted science that shows that the vaccine is both safe and effective at preventing COVID-19. So would Dr. Pino, would his job be saved from termination under your bill?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
This bill doesn't address employees. This bill addresses physicians. The use of free speech by a healthcare practitioner.
Ranking Member Smith, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Pino is a healthcare practitioner. He just happens to be employed by the State Department of Health. So can you explain to me why he would not be included in the bill? I just assumed that he should be.
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
Representative Smith, that's not something that I have contemplated, but I'd certainly be willing to discuss that with you.
Thank you. Representative Girardi, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Drake, for bringing this bill. Some of the discussion has been centered around the definition of constitutionally protected speech. And in reading this bill, I didn't have the same concerns about conflicts with the Department of Health because it's generally understood that fraudulent statements aren't protected constitutional speech. Is that your same determination in presenting this bill?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
I would agree with you, Representative Andrade.
Representative Andrade, you're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. And a couple hypotheticals have been thrown around. Would this bill relate to, say, a county health official using coercive language or trying to pressure someone to become vaccinated after the state has already said an employer cannot force someone to be vaccinated?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
No, it would not.
Thank you.
Representative Maggard, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Drake. We'll take this a little different. I know right now, because I've just dealt with this, that in open heart surgery, there's a battle going on between robotics and splitting your chest open, right? So if the one doctor puts a paper out and says, the only way to do it is robotics, this is how I see it. In your bill, I mean, you're protecting a guy like that. Is that a fair question? Is that a fair statement?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
I would say so.
Okay.
And Representative Maggot, you're recognized for follow-up.
Oh, sorry.
No problem.
And even though the association picked one way or the other, if he was against the robotics and he said this is the safest way to go or this is what he thinks due to his study, he would be protected under your bill because he believes he's saving lives. He believes this is his opinion, though the whole association may disagree, but this is what your bill does, correct?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
It's exactly what my bill does.
Thank you very
much. Further questions? Seeing none. Oh, Representative Scamani, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I apologize. So I'm trying to remember the name of the viral video that our Surgeon General, who's in the process of being confirmed, was in, that former President Trump retweeted, but I feel like folks know what I'm talking about. It was a video that was really spreading a lot of disinformation about the pandemic and ways to treat it that are not medically proven or even potentially safe. So you could argue that, you know, sharing that video based on your bill, because, you know, it's not going to be that person spreading the information is not liable because they might have a relationship with a patient, right, for 3 years. But arguably, any information coming from a medical provider can cause harm because folks see those white coats, they assume that there's credibility there, right? And so I guess my question is, in that type of situation where a social media posting goes viral, it's not based in fact, but because of the image of credibility, people consider it fact, and someone gets hurt because of it, they never get vaccinated or they pursue untraditional treatment method and they get even more sick and they don't make it, can that family sue because that video went viral? Can that family do anything? Or I guess in the case of your bill specifically, can a board remove that doctor's certification even if there's not evidence per se that what they said caused that harm, but the family members know that, you know, this patient was a big follower of that provider, right? I guess I'm trying to figure out, when harm is caused, does your bill provide unnecessary protection to the point where we should take that person's license away or a board should have the opportunity to do that? Is there a fear that it's just too broad, that you're kind of letting people escape without consequences for intentionally spreading misinformation?
You got that, Representative Drake? I think that last part, you're recognized.
The remedies are there currently. I mean, people have access to the courts. If there's a cause of action, the same cause of action that may exist based on your example exists today. What I'm saying is that a healthcare practice, you know, a physician who is practicing medicine in the state of Florida, that they should not be infringed on their ability to speak in terms that is not designed to cause harm or does not violate willful negligence.
Representative Scamani, you recognize for a follow-up.
Thanks so much, Chair. I guess my concern is that there are a lot of grifters on the internet who maybe got a medical profession, but they see an opportunity to make money or to spread misinformation to become famous. It happens every day across the political spectrum. But unfortunately, you know, so much of this misinformation, it's not just political, it has harm to cause towards people.
You have a question, Representative?
So my question is, you know, this bill has the potential to create a lot of unnecessary confusion, administrative burden for DOH. Is there a positive when it comes to stopping disinformation? Is your bill going to help quell disinformation, or is it going to let it spread with that consequence?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
The only thing this bill does is it affords a physician who practices in Florida the ability, the same constitutional freedoms granted by the United States Constitution in its First Amendment, as any other American. That's all it does.
Representative Scamani, you're recognized.
Last question, Chair, thank you. When you join a medical profession and become board certified, are there standards you're committing to that, you know, to some degree also limit your speech because you're agreeing to some sort of, you know, standards established under that board certification?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
So the AMA Code of Medical Ethics, there are 9 different principles of medical ethics. And if you look at number 7, hold on just a second. Okay, in number 8, it says a physician shall, while caring for a patient, regard responsibility to the patient as paramount. So, I mean, it exists in the Code of Medical Ethics, and this bill is not going to change that.
Representative Skidmore, you're recognized for question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I was curious about the fiscal impact in the analysis. It seems rather large. 12 FTEs and a lot of additional costs and mailing and expenses. Is there some way that you could reduce these costs or change this legislation to be not so costly? And does the budget reflect these additional costs to DOH?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
Thank you. Most of the costs are reflected in the cost of postage. So if there's a better way to send that information out, or more economical means to do that, then I say we explore that. But I mean, each year the budget that we pass contemplates the agency's overall expenditure, so it would be contemplated.
Representative Skidmore, you're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. Actually, the bulk of it is FTE costs. It's $805,062. The expenses are significantly less, but collectively, it's a very large amount that the DOH would have to absorb. With 12 new employees just to manage the complaint turnaround in 7 days. It doesn't seem like you've addressed this, or how the agency is supposed to absorb that. It's a pretty significant cost into their budget.
Representative Skidmore, did you have a question about the FTEs, maybe?
Sorry, did I not phrase that in a question?
There wasn't really a question there, but yeah. maybe address the FTE question,
yeah.
Representative Drake, and your answer, that'd be great. You're recognized.
So if there's, let's use a different industry, for example. Let's say that there's the potential that environmental damages may exist in a certain area of the state based on activities that are taking place either through some private citizen or through some corporate activity. And we as policymakers, and we have an obligation to make sure that the public is protected. So if we're allowing people to live their lives and be free and to run after that, to exercise that pursuit of attaining happiness, there are responsibilities that we have, and we have to take into account what our obligation is to the public. So we would make sure that we would test. That's why we make restaurants go through certain rigorous testing and make sure that customers that go there, that they're afforded provided a clean environment, a safe environment, where they would feel safe if they went into a restaurant, or if they were swimming in the water, or they were drinking water from a certain area. So we have to make that policy decision: are we going to allocate monies to provide this public protection? And so we do. And every year when we establish and pass our budget, we contemplate that. So what I'm asking you is to consider this bill, House Bill 687, and the provisions in it. I believe that it's the right thing to do to address the protection of our physicians who take care of us when we're at our worst state.
Representative Skidmore, you're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Switching gears for a second. So I understand your example and the impact on public health of those things. And there are benchmarks that those things are measured against. Cleanliness, the, you know, the parts per billion or parts per million of phosphorus in water. There's a variety of things. The way that things are, work right now in terms of ethics for physicians, those boards that are now going to be neutered are the benchmark. So now who becomes the benchmark for physician speech?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
I mean, they're bound to a code of medical ethics. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. If you're a physician and you're practicing medicine, you want to be competent and professional in what you're doing in providing that service. I don't think that a common sense physician is going to do something ridiculous or reckless. And what I'm saying is that if they are acting in good behavior, if they're in the practice of their medicine and giving us health advice, that in doing so, they should do that to the best of their ability, but that the government should not restrict their ability to speak on what they are professionally trained to do, that they should not squelch their speech if they want to make comments that could be taken out of context or could be contradictory to what someone else may assert, like in Representative Maggard's example.
Ranking Member Smith, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Drake, I'm curious if there's any legitimate, reputable medical organizations that are supporting your bill, or are they all just opposed?
Representative Drake, you're recognized.
I have not been contacted by anyone, so okay, I don't
so
know the answer.
No reputable or
Representative
medical
Smith,
organizations
you're recognized.
Are supporting your bill.
Was there a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, no, I just wanted to clarify for the record.
You can save that for debate, ranking member.
I will. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Very good. For the questions. Seeing none, we're going to move into amendments. We have two. Ranking Member Smith, you're recognized to present Amendment 1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What we're doing here with this amendment is we are adding some language to make clear that the scope of the bill includes the fact that employees of the Department of Health can also not be reprimanded, sanctioned, or be threatened to revoke their license, certificate, or registration of healthcare practitioner. They cannot be terminated from their employment for exercising their constitutionally protected free speech. That is the amendment.
Members, questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions, we have no public testimony. Members, we are in debate. Representative Escamani, you recognize in debate.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. So members, we are navigating the situation right now in Orange County, where our Department of Health director, who really has been a hero to many of us all through the COVID-19 pandemic, was in a very a swift way, temporarily removed from his position as we wait for more information from the state. It came as a shock to many of us because Dr. Pino really has been just the clear voice of calm in helping Orange County navigate the COVID-19 pandemic. And of course, there's been a lot of confusion over why he was removed. And I think in a lot of ways, we're waiting for clarity on that. But an email was made public around Dr. Pino just asking about vaccination rates to his staff. He wasn't telling them to get vaccinated. He wasn't threatening, but he was expressing his support of vaccinations and how he feels like there's value to healthcare providers, following the best science and trying to reflect the same vaccination rates of the county. So it wasn't him saying you have to do this. It wasn't threatening or coercive in nature. it was kind of like complaining a little bit, right? Like, come on, guys, get your stuff together. And that email, we at least are left to believe, is what caused this immediate absence. So the point Representative Smith is trying to make is that if we're going to pick and choose freedom of speech in different circumstances, then let DOH follow the priorities established in this policy and respect the free speech of a medical expert complaining about the lack of vaccination among staff. And I think that it's a fair point to make. And I don't think we should punish medical providers who work for the state for just trying to encourage and create a culture of conversation around vaccination. And so for that, I encourage folks to support the amendment.
Representative Girardi, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair. And because this amendment has been cited to a specific circumstance, if the removal of that public health director is found to not be a statement of opinion, but a coercive act in an attempt to try and force employees to become vaccinated, not with statements of opinion, but with terms like, if you don't get vaccinated, it's pathetic to his employees, would this amendment still apply to that circumstance?
We're in debate, Representative.
Oh, yeah. I apologize.
We're in debate.
The questions. Sorry.
We're in debate.
Well, I guess the question stands. I mean, it's the same as debate. I mean, if this is a question about medical practitioners being subjected to boards for things completely separate from their health practice, this circumstance that this amendment's being used to apply to doesn't apply.
Further debate. Ranking Member Smith, you're recognized to close in your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I brought this amendment forward because I think it's important that if we're going to go down this rabbit hole of saying that we're going to protect all physicians and healthcare professionals from being held accountable by the boards that regulate their profession over free speech, I mean, it sounds a whole lot like this bill is crafted intentionally to protect Florida doctors who agree with Governor DeSantis and Dr. Ladapo's pushing of misinformation, disseminating of disinformation about vaccines and effective therapies. Yet we're allowing for respected, reputable physicians who work for the Department of Health to be fired from their job for doing their job, for encouraging employees of the Department of Health to get vaccinated during a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic, following all accepted mainstream science-based consensus on the issue. If we're not going to protect our county health directors from political retaliation for also exercising free speech, which I would say is more about just doing their job, then this bill is extremely one-sided and totally inconsistent with the values that it purports to espouse. Please vote for this amendment. Thank you.
All in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay.
Nay.
Please show the amendment fails. Amendment number two, Ranking Member Smith, you're recognized to present that amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment basically tries to bring our own Florida statute into compliance with the bill and makes it consistent with the bill. What we're doing here is we are essentially repealing from statute the infamous Docs and Glocks law that passed out of this legislature in 2011, which infringes on the free speech of doctors to be able to ask basic questions about gun ownership of their patients in order to keep our families safe from gun violence. This amendment will repeal that language from statute so that it can be consistent with with the underlying bill. Thank you.
Questions for Ranking Member Smith on his amendment? Seeing none, we have no public testimony. Members, we are in debate. Representative Escalante, you're recognized in debate.
I got a promotion. Thank you, Chair. I just want to say thank you, Representative Smith, or Ranking Member Smith, for this amendment. We might as well clean up parts of Florida law that ironically prohibit free speech while this legislative body wants to apparently increase it. So it's very interesting to me the past decade, just how attitudes shift so quickly depending on the topic at hand. But I appreciate your efforts in trying to clean up statutes since we know this is not constitutional, then it's still unfortunately in law.
Further debate. Ranking Member Smith, you're recognized to close in your amendment.
Thank you, members. And just to be clear, what we're doing here in this amendment is we are repealing legally dead statute. I say legally dead because we are repealing provisions of Florida law that have already been declared unconstitutional by the courts and have not been appealed by the state of Florida. We can't, out of one side of our mouth, say, well, we want to pass a new law to protect doctors' so-called freedom of speech, and then leave in statute the very provisions that prevent them from being able to exercise their free speech and actually keep our community safe from gun violence. It was a total overreach for the Florida legislature to pass a law in 2011 that said doctors are not allowed to ask patients basic questions about gun ownership. Why? So that they could teach them safe practices around safe storage so that a child doesn't accidentally find a loaded weapon in their home and shoot themselves or shoot somebody else. These are real problems that exist in our communities. We have to get rid of this statute. And I think it's important for folks to understand that on average, one child is shot in Florida every 17 hours. Let's do our due diligence today to make sure that our statute is consistent, that we finally repeal the unconstitutional Docs and Glocks language and pass this amendment today. Thank you, members.
All in favor of Amendment 2, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Show the amendment failing, seeing three hands. Aaron, please call the roll on Amendment Number 2 and announce the vote.
Representatives Andrade? No. Arrington?
Yes.
Barrero?
No.
Escamani?
Yes.
Fernandez-Barquin? Garrison?
No.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Maggard?
No.
McLean?
No.
Rizzo?
Nope.
Rommel?
No.
Saroy?
No.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
No.
Tuck?
No.
Chair Robinson?
No.
5 yeas and 11 nays, Mr. Chairman.
Please show the amendment has failed. We'll move into public testimony. Given we have a number of speaker cards, and I want to obviously give members time for debate and Rep. Drake to close in his bill, I'm going to limit each speaker to 2 minutes. So please keep that in mind. You have 2 minutes. First up, John Ward, Emerald Coast Medical Association, followed by Angeli Akey. Sir, you're recognized for 2 minutes.
Chair Robinson, committee members, I'm here today asking each of you for support of this bill. When I graduated from the University of Florida College of Medicine in 2001, the American Medical Association had just updated its code of ethics. It is a 9 simple bullet points on the obligations physicians have to their patients. These obligations are extreme and require the physician providing care to cast all other interests aside in the patient care setting. Importantly, item 8 notes that these obligations end outside of the patient care setting. So I'm going to make it clear to all of you what code of ethics I signed up for by becoming a physician. I signed up for missing dance recitals and baseball games because some patients inevitably bleed after surgery. And just a few months ago, when my wife called to let me know a careless driver ran a stop sign and totaled her expedition, I had to send an assistant because I had 8 patients in the office and 2 of them had open surgical wounds. So there is a code of ethics, and if you are an actual patient under my care, I will put you first, whether you're HIV positive, unvaccinated, or transgendered. That is what I signed up for. But what I did not sign up for is when I am at home, when I'm at school board meetings, when I am in public forums, and certainly not on social media, I did not sign up to be unable to express my opinion on critical race theory in schools. The fact that in human biology, there are only 2 genders, or my personal belief that life begins with a heartbeat and we should protect it. For many, this bill is about the pandemic and COVID-19. That's not the case for me. For me, this bill is necessary to prevent the cancel culture cancer that is destroying so many lives and professions from taking hold in medicine. The Federation of State Medical Boards and the American Board of Medical Specialties.
Thank you. Your 2 minutes has expired.
Thank you. All right.
I'm not going to allow questions during public testimony. It's about public testimony. We've got to get through these folks. Sure.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if this information is available, but for doctors who are speaking, I am curious if they've lost their license at all. I don't know if doctors who are speaking can tell us that, but that information would be helpful.
Okay. If those testifying would like to weave that into their presentation that they get 2 minutes, you're allowed to do that. Dr. Angeli Akey, you're recognized, followed by Carolyn Zonia.
Chair Robinson and members of the Professions and Public Health Subcommittee, thank you. I stand in support of House Bill 687. I've never been cited. I'm 29 years graduate from the College of Medicine. I trained at Yale in internal medicine and have served 4,000 patients over the past 22 years in Gainesville, Florida. In March of 2020, we pivoted to having to do telemedicine and tent visits and swabs. Facebook Live was our live stream to our patients. We filmed over 60 webinars on COVID. In July of last year, I got a letter that was unsolicited that was to all of board-certified people in internal medicine, family practice, and pediatrics that pretty much said, watch out, you're being watched. And at that point, we stopped our webinar series and brought our internal information to a group medical visit. So we had to pivot, and that lost a lot of information for a lot of the public. I'll let you know that I published 2 books on COVID. This one has over 150 peer-reviewed citations. It's called Kick COVID-19 to the Curb. This was published last month, Fine-Tune Your Immune System.
We don't allow props. Can you just...
Okay, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
But I will tell you that what was really disturbing was 7 days ago, our federal government, U.S. Department of Homeland Security, published a National Terrorism Advisory System bulletin just 7 days and 2 hours ago, and I'd invite the committee to read it in its entirety. Let me share a paragraph. The primary terrorism-related threat to the United States continues to stem from lone offenders or small cells of individuals who are motivated by a range of foreign and domestic grievances, often cultivated through the consumption of certain online content. The proliferation of false or misleading narratives which sow discord or undermine public trust in the U.S. governmental institutions, for example. There's widespread online proliferation of false or misleading narratives regarding unsubstantiated widespread election fraud and COVID-19. Grievances associated with these themes inspired violent extremist attacks during 2021.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Carolyn Zonia, followed by Joel Rudman. Ms. Zonia, you're recognized for 2 minutes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm Dr. Carolyn Zonia, and I'm here to ask you to oppose HB 687. History is rife with snake oil salesmen. These were profiteers who sought to exploit an unsuspecting public. Out of this history, we have elevated the requirements of physicians, requiring that they meet standards of practice and ethics. You've no doubt seen in the analysis in your meeting report that the process is already substantive. Out of over 41,000 complaints in the past 3 years, less than 10% have proceeded to sanctions last year. I'm also concerned about the chilling effect of identifying individuals that might complain about a practitioner's practice. So please oppose 687. And I have not been sanctioned or lost my license. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Doctor. Joel Rudman. Dr. Rudman, you're recognized, followed by Sophie Rudman. Doctor, you're recognized for 2 minutes.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. So I am Dr. Joel Rudman, referenced by Representative Drake. So now you know all about me. I'm a board-certified MD in family practice in Navarre, Florida. I'm here because I received that letter from the American Board of Family Medicine threatening to revoke my board certification for what they called denigrating vaccine efforts. But you also heard from the representative about the headlines. I am that doctor who is promoting vaccines. I was the most vocal advocate of vaccination in my county. I don't mind sharing that I'm fully vaccinated, as is every member of my family. So you're probably asking, what on earth did I do wrong? Well, I have some theories. Maybe some radicals felt I wasn't doing enough because I have been critical of mandates. Maybe it's because I treat the unvaccinated like normal, decent human beings. Or maybe they just see my career and my family as collateral damage in their larger war against free speech. Personally, I think it's because I caught COVID over Christmas and had the gall to broadcast it over Facebook Live. But I don't know, because when I spoke to my board president last week, he would not let me record the conversation, so I can't share that with you, but he also would not name an accusation nor an accuser. Members of the committee, I'm not asking you to grant me something that I've never had. I have always had the right to speak my mind and tell patients what I believe to be right. I routinely tell patients which hospital we prefer or how they need to lose weight or how now's the time they need to stop drinking. It is my honesty that makes me the busiest doctor in my town, but cancel culture and outside organizations are trying to take that right away from me. I am simply asking you to codify and protect the rights granted to me by the First Amendment. And rightly so, for the few bad doctors out there, this bill offers them no shelter whatsoever. Rather, it encourages these agencies to focus less on personal beliefs and memes and to focus more on doctors who are actually causing harm. Right now in America, we have ER doctors quoted on CNN saying they would prefer to let the unvaccinated die. They did not get a letter like I did.
Thank you, Doctor. Sophie Rudman.
I waive my right in support.
Waves in support. Steve Simpson, you're recognized for 2 minutes, sir. Followed by Aaron DiPietro.
Good afternoon. My name is Steve Simpson, and this is my wife, Michelle, sitting over there. We're the parents of a fourth grade ADD, ADHD student. Leading up to the first day of school this year, Rocky Hanna and our school board mandated masks for all elementary and middle school students, regardless of parental rights, unless we found a pediatrician or psychologist to sign the medical opt-out form. Little did parents know, all pediatricians in Leon County signed a petition saying they would not sign the medical opt-out form 2 days before school started. We scrambled to find a doctor or psychologist to sign the medical opt-out form for our daughter. With 23,500 elementary and middle school students in Leon County and no pediatricians to sign the form, psychologist appointments quickly turned into a 6 to 12 month wait. After 2 days of an exhaustive search and calling, we found a doctor willing to assist us 10 counties and more than 200 miles away to meet the August 27th deadline. For our daughter, every day at school was a challenge and her grades suffered. She came home telling us every day she hated school and complained she couldn't breathe. Her face started breaking out even while changing masks 3 to 4 times a day. Every night we took the time to hand wash her mask with non-perfumed, unscented laundry detergent, trying to alleviate the discomfort. After turning in the medical opt-out form and a rocky start to the school year, our daughter absolutely loves school again and maintains her normal AB honor roll. Please pass House Bill 687.
Anthony DiPietro. Sir, you're recognized, followed by Angeli Mon, AKE.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Aaron DiPietro, Florida Family Policy Council, in support of House Bill 687. Freedom of speech is a constitutional right for all, and medical providers are no exception to that rule. No doctor should be punished or penalized for exercising their constitutional right. To force a doctor to have to choose between exercising their right of free speech and fear of losing their license or remaining silent on an issue that they feel like they should be speaking out on is an unconscionable decision that no doctor should be forced to make in the United States of America. If in a hypothetical situation this body were to directly restrict physicians' free speech through a legislative action, we all know it would be immediately struck down in court. Therefore, we should also make sure that independent medical agencies, which this body has in a sense granted police powers to, by granting them oversight over doctors and physicians, should also not have the ability to be able to penalize doctors for practicing their freedom of speech. Diversity of thought and the free exchange of ideas is critical in preserving freedom of speech, and this absolutely should apply to medical professionals. Science is not always the clear-cut black and white perspective we often assume. There's a lot of gray areas, and there's room for debate and progress to be able to have the advanced science. This is how we progress as a society. Otherwise, penalizing doctors who differ from a particular, you know, conventional standard in whatever field will stifle the free exchange of ideas and suppress that free speech exchange that is the basis of the advancement of science itself. We ask you, for the sake of scientific progress and our constitutional rights of freedom of speech, to please support House Bill 687. Thank you so much, members.
Thank you, sir. We've already heard from Dr. Akey, who's a proponent. Sophia Pinilla, president of the Florida Catholic Medical Association.
That's not me. I'm reading on behalf of Dr. Diane Gowski, who is the president of the Florida Catholic Medical Association.
You're recognized.
That's okay. I write in support of House Bill 687 to protect the free speech of physicians and other healthcare professionals in Florida who need to be able to speak without fear of reprisal or loss of their license, certification, or hospital or clinic privileges for exercising his or her constitutional right of free speech, including but not limited to use of a social media platform. Censorship promotes fear and restricts physicians and other healthcare practitioners in their professional activities to the potential detriment of patient care. No one should be threatened or coerced to limit their speech which expresses their clinical, scientific, religious, moral, and ethical beliefs. House Bill 687 helps protect our free speech. This best serves both physicians and our patients. It is imperative that physicians and other healthcare practitioners be protected from attempts to mandate silence on differing viewpoints. Open debate, or hearing both sides of an issue, is vital to the advancement of medicine. Our voices matter. Please protect our God-given and constitutional right of freedom of speech for physicians and other healthcare professionals for practice of medicine in Florida. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. John Little, Dr. Little, did I pronounce that correct? You have a doctor's handwriting. Sir, you're recognized.
You're absolutely correct in that regard. John Littell, I'm a family physician. I did see patients this morning down at Ocala. I also have practice in Kissimmee. Representative McLean was here, I believe. There you go. How are you? I was an Army family physician for quite some time, received the Meritorious Service Medal for work in total quality management at Fort Gordon Eisenhower, and I want to thank you for what you're doing for the veterans. Thank you. I've also treated over 2,700 COVID patients, both in the hospital and in the outpatient setting. I'm one of about a half dozen family physicians or pediatricians in the state of Florida who actually will take care of parents who do not want their children to receive the official vaccine schedule. It is, as you just heard, very difficult. I want to share just for 30 seconds of a doctor. How many of you received polio vaccine in your life? That would be everyone in this room. I want to mention a Dr. Herbert Ratner, who in Oak Park, Illinois, in 1960, was the first to be opposed to oral polio publicly. He was the director of public health. He was threatened with his job and being a misinformed until there was an outbreak of leukemia in Oak Park. It turned out 40 years later that he was justified in that there was simian virus 40, SV40, in those vials, and there was live poliovirus. We only 30 years later switched to IPV, inactivated poliovirus. In other words, what I'm saying is very intelligent people, Dr. Ratner, who founded La Leche League, have been opposed to vaccines and not silenced. Let me just say this. this much. There's a difference between the education of a physician and the education of a politician. I went to D.C. many times. I asked, do you guys use TQM policies when you make policies? Do you have focused PDCA? I was told, no, this is on my side, Republicans. No, we take marching orders from our you-know-who. All right, I hope you all don't do that, but I hope you want physicians. I really hope you want physicians who are able to use their God-given reason and intelligence rather than to march lockstep, which I was told I had to do by one hospital, and I got the same letter from Family Medicine. All right, I think you all want physicians who will actually look at you as a person, use their God-given reason and creativity, and yes, their moral and religious convictions to see you as a person in front of them and not as a machine, because that's what's happening in medicine. The medical students I teach, I'm on the faculty of 5 medical schools.
Thank you, Dr.
And they come in and they're dutifully following protocols. They're not thinking creatively and they're afraid because they're going to.
Thank you, Doctor. John Harris Maurer, Equality Florida. Sir, you're recognized for 2 minutes.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. Very briefly, my name is John Harris Maurer, and I'm the Public Policy Director for Equality Florida. Equality Florida has serious concerns with House Bill 687 as written and amended. We certainly appreciate the interest discussed today in protecting free speech. Our concern is about how this bill ties the hands of the Department of Health and its subsidiary boards that are charged with oversight to keep Floridians and consumers, patients safe. This limits oversight without reprimand, sanction, or suspending licensure to circumstances of, quote, direct physical harm. But this legislation deals with boards addressing professions like psychologists, psychotherapists, social workers, and counselors who don't physically practice on patients. We know there are non-physical harms like fraud, deceptive practices, even sexual harassment of patients that Department of Health and these boards should be able to consider. It's also worth noting, to be clear, as amended, this bill is not limited to social media. It specifically says that it is including, but not limited to social media. Equality Florida urges strong caution on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Ellen McWright. Doctor, you're recognized for 2 minutes.
Thank you so much for hearing this bill and hopefully understanding the importance of it. I want to give you, the representative had asked if anyone had lost their license. I want to take you through what losing board certification means, even if it's temporary, how it affects patients and how it affects the physician and how it must never be done frivolously. So a number of years ago, I was delayed in taking the 10-year recertification exam. I had already had my initial board certification. So at that time, and why would you ask that? For life circumstances. There was so much going on in my life, and I think some of maybe everyone can understand when there's household things, there's family, ill members of your family, et cetera. So those kinds of things got in the way. I had already planned to take the test the next time they offered it. An HMO decided that I was no longer competent or capable of seeing their patients. Well, the problem with, and kicked me out of their network. Well, the problem with that was there was only one other rheumatologist in the network, and that rheumatologist did not see fibromyalgia. Fibromyalgia is a difficult disease to manage. A lot of doctors don't want to deal with it. But those patients went without a physician to cover their very serious, complicated medical problem. Now, once I took the test, the HMO came back to me and asked me to rejoin their network, which I politely declined, but I did tell them that they had a population of patients that was not being cared for and that I would see those patients, but there would be no discount for my services. So granted, not very many did come in at that time. I do want to fast forward to one other story. In 2016, I authored a bill before the FMA entitled End the Monopoly of Board Certification by the American Board of Medical Specialties. That went before the Florida Medical Association Board of Governors. The medical specialty boards were there, very contentious. And my name was all over it. I author my own resolutions. I don't hide behind my medical society. Anyway, long story short, within 10 days, I received a notification from my hospital, one of the hospitals in Pensacola, that said, hi, Dr. McKnight, we've been notified that you are no longer board certified. So I don't know, and I'll say it right here, who notified them. I cannot say who notified them, but there seemed to be a kind of a cause and effect of me so vocally speaking out against the boards. That tells me there's punitive nature to some of this. What that did force me to do, and I'll use a nuance in language here, I was forced to voluntarily relinquish my staff privileges that I had held for 27 years without a blemish on my record. My point is, it's important to pass this bill out of committee. We have people in the House, we have people on the Senate side who are willing to work with us to make this a legislative achievement that can be passed in the House, passed in the Senate, and signed by the governor, who has already indicated he is willing to sign the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Doctor. I believe we have several that are waiving. I'll try to read the names. Wolf Alexander is waving in support. Wolf Wanenda is waving in support. Kara Gross, American Civil Liberties Union of Florida, is waving in opposition. Chris Newland, Florida Society of Dermatology and Dermatologic Surgery, is waving in support. Barbara Devane, Florida Now, is waving in opposition. Anastasia Hochblicker, North Florida Integrative Medicine, is waving in opposition. Tiana DiMarco, North Florida Integrative Medicine, is waving in support. Parker Smith, North Florida Integrative Medicine, is waving in support. Shivani Patel, North Florida Integrative Medicine, waving in support. Ida V. Escamani, Florida Rising, waving in opposition. We had several duplicates, so we got through public comment a little quicker than I anticipated. So members, we are now in debate. We are in debate on PCS for HB 687. Any members wishing to debate? Representative Escamani, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you so much, Chair, and I appreciate folks for being here. Representative Drake, I don't see you right now behind the podium, but I think you're still there. And I just want, hello. And I just want to say thank you for answering our questions and, you know, providing some more clarity on your motivation. You know, I appreciate folks speaking and expressing their concerns. I don't know. Maybe one story out of those that were shared is someone who experienced a lack of board certification. I would like to learn more about that personal experience. But recently, it doesn't seem like any of the speakers actually lost certification. And again, I would like to learn more if you did, because I understand the line that you're trying to draw is that I have political opinions. I want to share them. Based on the fact that no one's been sanctioned, at least no one here, it doesn't seem like you're being hindered to have that political opinion. I encourage you to have the political opinion. I mean, I am an advocate, and before I ran for office, I've always been very vocal, and there will be people who cancel you for that. Doesn't mean you should stop. You should continue to have an opinion. I think that's what makes our country so great. My only hope is that, you know, we can have opinions that are not super partisan or designed to shut you down. You know, we should counsel, not cancel. And I think that there's bipartisanship around calling people in before you call them out, right, on any subject matter. And so with that said, I do worry that this policy is really just another effort to politicize an area that shouldn't be politicized. And for me, the line is between having a political opinion and spreading disinformation, because it's one thing if you have varying perspectives on different issues being debated, you know, in Congress or being debated in these halls, but you also should have some sort of consequence if you're spreading information that is disinformation masqueraded as an opinion. And I think COVID-19 does bring us one of the best examples, but as we mentioned earlier, there are plenty of other examples. You have HIV and AIDS, and people who still believe that this is something that only exists among gay men. You have disinformation around STIs or around, oh my gosh, pregnancy prevention. The number of people who don't know a lot about preventative care when it comes to the most effective ways to prevent a pregnancy. And unfortunately, that does create some really difficult outcomes with young people getting disinformation or folks of any age and making decisions that are not informed because they were disinformed, right? So I just think it's way too broad, and we're creating this environment where, disinformation can be masqueraded as fact because of a person's initials, and whether it's an MD or another initial. I think that's the concern, is that we're creating an environment where there are no consequences if you spread disinformation. And I just feel like the reason why these boards exist and that certification exists is quality control. It's just to make sure that we are following what is the considered peer-reviewed best practices. And if that does change, as opinions do change, based on what more information we have, that can be done in an environment that isn't political. It can be done in an environment that's scientists talking to scientists in a well-vetted space, which we have so many of those institutions already, and many people here participate in those same systems. And so this is not an issue that constituents come to me for. Constituents come to me because they can't access healthcare. And I would encourage this committee, I assume this is our last meeting, but I wish there was, more attention towards ensuring people have access to providers, not necessarily falling victim to what seems like a constant pattern of political rhetoric masqueraded into a bill. And so for that, Mr. Chairman, I'm gonna have to vote no. And I do hope that at the very least, if this bill does progress, it can at least be narrowed, so it doesn't have these consequences when it comes to disinformation, which will harm people both physically and mentally. And that's just not something I'm comfortable with. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Girardi, you recognize in debate.
Thank you, Chair. And when it comes to debates about access to care and free speech, the concern that I have is that some folks advocating for access to care about getting more doctors and nurses into the profession, but only the ones that agree with them. And I've read Dr. Rudman's letter that he received from the American Board of Family Medicine, and I was hoping someone came from that board today, and I was able to ask them questions, because I was outraged at what they sent them. And it was a form letter, and it did cause me great concern. This isn't the fact that we live in the United States of America that was created in response to things like star courts and secret committees and complete lacking of due process. The fact that we were founded on those principles, and a doctor in Florida could receive a letter saying, you've been accused of something, but we won't tell you what, and we won't tell you by who, and you're obligated within 30 days to respond to this letter with forms made available on your practice website regarding exemptions from COVID-19 vaccination, despite the fact that I don't believe Dr. Rudman ever did that. You're required to go sift through your social media, your private personal social media, and turn over anything that we think we might not like without any guidance or due process or explanation. It's offensive to me personally, because we're sitting here in Florida talking about access to care and caring about patients and caring about private individuals' rights and saying we care about science, which, by the way, science, if anyone has ever questioned it, is never settled. People win scientific arguments based on best evidence, and some things stop getting challenged because it'd be ridiculous to challenge them. But if you think the science is settled en masse from 2 years ago, I challenge you to go see Dr. Fauci's exclamations 2 years ago and compare them to his statements today. Doctors are allowed to have opinions about public health policy without their professional acumen being challenged and harangued and insulted. The last I checked, none of us on this panel and this committee are physicians. And there have been several physicians who've come up and spoken passionately today in front of us that I feel like some of us have insulted. I feel like we've insulted some of their intelligence, acting like we know more about public health policy and the effects of an infectious disease protocol than they do. So I would encourage everyone to support this bill. The folks that came to me with this concern, the first questions I asked them were, are you in a medically underserved community? Because your license is very important in a medically underserved community if you care about access to care. And my second question was, what are some of the unintended consequences of the way this bill is currently drafted? I think Chair Drake is an incredible sponsor for this bill. He's very reasonable, and he's willing to work through those things. And he's no stranger, after 8 years of service here in the Florida House, to bills that have unintended consequences. And I have no doubt he can work through them. But if you care about access to care, and you care about free speech and the marketplace of ideas, this bill is a no-brainer. Thank you.
Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair. And I apologize. I missed a lot of I missed all of the bill presentation. I was in another committee. But as a lawyer and as somebody who works with the First Amendment every day, I'm really confused about the bill, and I'm conflicted, because the First Amendment guarantees freedoms concerning religion, expression, and assembly. And when I read the bill and I look at line 20, I'm scratching my head, because a recognizing agency is an assembly. And so what we're doing is we're telling an assembly that they can't be free to recognize and assemble in a manner that they want, or they can't be free to sanction one of their members who joined their assembly because that member is falling below the standards of their agency. And that in and of itself, as far as I see, is a violation of the First Amendment. The First Amendment protects the ability of an individual and the ability of a group to assemble. But the First Amendment also restricts our ability to make false statements, for obscenity, fighting words, defamation, child pornography, perjury, blackmail, threats. So it's not unfettered. The First Amendment is not unfettered to just say what you want and when you want, especially if it's potentially dangerous. And if you have joined an organization, you have to follow the dictates of that organization. I'm a member of the Florida Bar. I don't have the right as a bar member to criticize the judiciary. And that's just something that we live with, because that is the standard of the Florida Bar, a group that I chose to join. I think the bill is misguided, trying to place the rights of an individual above those of the rights of another group that's protected under the First Amendment, which is an assembly and something that the individual joined. And when you join that group, you're compelled to follow their rules and regulations. And the place to change it is inside that group, not here in the Florida legislature.
Further debate. Did I miss your hand, Ranking Member Smith? Thought I did. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I don't get this bill. So we often talk about government overreach, and what we're doing here is we're tying the hands of medical boards whose job it is to keep Floridians safe. Medical boards that are not run by politicians, they're run by medical professionals. This bill undermines the state's regulatory authority over medical professionals. It interferes with the rights of these boards to discipline healthcare practitioners who push disinformation, misinformation, and yes, it all comes from COVID, because we didn't hear the bill 2 years ago or 3 years ago. We're hearing the bill now, because that's where the outcry is amongst individuals who want to continue to do this. It was mentioned earlier in the presentation, you know, what reason would a physician have to disseminate disinformation? It's the free market. You know, they're going to have less patients. Maybe the reason they would have to disseminate disinformation is perhaps they can secure a position as the state surgeon general. This bill protects doctors who mislead patients and push ineffective cures. But meanwhile, this administration is punishing physicians like our county health director, Dr. Raul Pino, taking him off the job for simply doing his job and encouraging vaccinations for his staff. So at the end of the day, this bill protects Florida doctors who agree with the governor and continues to allow others who disagree to be punished and be fired from their positions. I think that this bill is bad policy. It sets a terrible precedent, and it's also totally hypocritical and inconsistent with other policies that have been pushed by this legislature, and I urge members to vote against it. Thank you.
Further debate? Representative Arrington, you recognize the debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief because my colleagues have already said a lot. And I would just say moving forward, if looking at the analysis, that's the one of the main reasons I'll be voting no. It says effect of the bill, and it's about two pages, and I would say about a page and a half of it say things that are negative, like how it will conflict with DOH, how the state of Florida will not have any control over the certification and disciplinary processes, and also the fiscal impact of $840,000+ and the fact that it says with the fines there could be fiscal impacts that are undetermined as well. So I just recommend Representative Drake moving forward. Those are some of my concerns, as the concerns that were brought up by staff, and I hope those will be addressed in future committees. Thank
you. Further debate? Representative Rommel, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you. Representative Drake, I want to thank you for bringing this bill. As we see rapid growth in our state of 1,100 people a day moving into the state, we hear all the time around the state how we have not enough access to healthcare workers, and as our state grows faster than we can get licensed healthcare workers, it's a concern. And now the cancel culture, unelected bureaucrats, self-serving, self-appointed boards that self-govern themselves are going to cancel out individuals that are licensed to tell them what they can or cannot say, to me is disgusting. The First Amendment, I'm actually one of the people here that's actually had a bill a few years ago protecting the First Amendment on our college campuses. And some of the self-proclaimed civil liberty groups that spoke here today that oppose your bill because they may not like what a doctor said, that are the same people that opposed my bill on the First Amendment. I find that disgusting. We have to protect individual freedoms, and the God-given right to speak is the number one thing. And if we can't do that, we've lost everything. We've heard testimony from people or debate from people talking about misinformation. I'm not a doctor. Doctor gives different diagnoses for different people. But all I do know that even today on my commute here from bureaucrats in Washington telling people to make sure they wear their mask to protect themselves, 350 million positive tests of COVID have been in the United States. And for somebody to tell me that some plastic mask that's made in China is going to protect me from COVID, hogwash, because I know it doesn't. Mask in general, first of all, for all the doctors in the room, protects you from not viruses, it protects you from infections. But we still have people convinced, I guess, the fear-mongering media cancel culture that if you wear a mask, you're going to protect it, when we all know now, 2.5 years later, that hasn't done anything to protect people. But you know what? Today, we're going to have a chance to protect doctors for being canceled from some bureaucrat or from self-serving board. So thank you for bringing the bill.
Further debate? Representative Drake, you're recognized to close in your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Members, you've heard from real people with real examples of how they were threatened because they had an opinion or have an opinion or because they disagreed with someone. And all I'm trying to do is end that. And with this, I'd ask for your support.
Representative Drake, having closed in his bill, Aaron, please call the roll on PCS for HB 687 and announce the vote.
Representatives Andrade?
Yes.
Arrington?
No.
Guerrero?
Yes.
Escamani?
No.
Fernandez-Barkin?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
No.
Maggard?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Rommel?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Skidmore?
No.
Smith?
No.
Snyder?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Robinson?
Yes.
12 yeas and 5 nays, Mr. Chairman.
Please show the bill reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, members, most likely this is our last committee time. I have really enjoyed our time together. Certainly, I want to thank Speaker Sprouse for the appointment, and working with Chair Burton has been wonderful. Chris, thank you so much for what you've done. And Aaron, thank you as well. We have some of the best staff in the world working for the Florida Health, in the Florida Health area. So thank you so much to my vice chair. Great job, as always. Thank you so much to my ranking member. We had some good times, some ups and some downs, but you're always respectful, and we may have disagreed on policy from time to time, but we're professionals, and I do appreciate the time we spent together and a lot of the good work that we got through this committee. This committee handles some of the, you know, we have to look at the last bill, some of the toughest, most passionate issues we handle in the state of Florida, and we all handled it with professionalism and with class, and we got our points across without denigrating the Florida House and our reputation, so I appreciate that. So have a wonderful rest of your session. With that, this concludes our subcommittee agenda. Ranking Member Smith moves we rise. Without objection, we are adjourned. Thank you.